Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stephen Nill, CEO of CharityChannel.com. So, you want your charity to succeed. You came to the right place. Integration of online and offline techniques is the key to your successful fundraising, and practical advice on going green is what you need. With this show, The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart, you will learn from experts around the world who provide advice you can use. Our host is Ted Hart, one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders. This year, he is celebrating 25 years in the nonprofit sector and the 10-year anniversary of his firm, TedHart.com. His books range from successful online fundraising to the use of social media and how to make your nonprofit green. His guests are leaders in their field who will share tips and trade secrets for nonprofit management, green strategy, and fundraising success. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. From the latest in charity news, technology, fundraising, and social networking, here's Ted.
Hey, and good afternoon. I'm coming to you live. This is Ted Hart. Thank you so much, Steve, for that wonderful introduction. It is December 14th. I'm coming to you live from a bit of overcast and blustery day here in the nation's capital. And as always, we start the show with Page One News. Now, always here on The Nonprofit Coach, you can find the radio links over at TedHartRadio.com. We've got a great show for you today, and don't miss the opportunity to dial in and ask a question personally of our Page 2 expert, who I will introduce in just a little while. You'll be able to dial in at 347-324-3080. Again, that number is 347-324-3080. Just press the number 1 to raise your hand to let me know that you're in the switchboard and would like to ask a question. You also can jump over in the chat room, and I see folks starting to arrive over in the chat room. And if you're super shy and would like to ask a question, you can always email me at TedHart@TedHart.com. Anyway, first up here on the Nonprofit Coach for news today is the release of this year's 2011 email marketing benchmark report. And this comes out, of course, from the fine folks over at Marketing Sherpa. And one of the things I think is very important that you'll find in the executive summary that we have over in the radio links today at TedHartRadio.com is the impact of email marketing maturity. And this is so important. We talk a lot about this on the show, and certainly in my lectures and in our newsletter, we talk about the importance of building the asset, starting to get people used to receiving your email and learning from your audience what they're looking for from you. And it does take time to mature that program. This study, and I'm quoting from the executive summary right now, this study has revealed a clear correlation between the phase of an organization's email marketing maturity and the effectiveness of its email programs. I think so many organizations want email to be immediately successful, immediately be raising a lot of money. Immediately people are clicking through to your email, and if you don't, you wonder if, well, maybe it's just not for us, or you stop before you even start. It takes time to build these kinds of assets, just as we've talked about in social media as well. There's no shortcuts to success. It takes serious strategy to success. And it's important that you read this year's new report coming over from Marketing Sherpa. Next up here on the Nonprofit Coach is just, this is just fun. You got to go take a look at this. Over on Mashable, we've got the world's Facebook relationships visualized. Over at Facebook, they had an intern, Paul Butler, who's interested in wondering where are all of his friends, just started kind of plotting out where of his friends, and they thought, gee, that'd be interesting if we looked at all of the various relationships around the world. And he started by using a sample of 10 million friend pairs. And now what you can see is the world the way that it looks from the Facebook social graph. And you can see all over the world where very, very clearly Facebook is huge in Europe, in the United States, of course. And you can see the growth in India and in the Far East. So it's important that we know how Facebook works. This is just an amazing visual representation of the kind of relationships that are now represented of 550-plus million members of Facebook. Find that over at the radio links at TedHartsRadio.com. The next thing that I've got up here for you, I'm going to set this up just a little bit because I am so excited. We have a big, big, big announcement today. And I've got a good friend of mine who's going to come on to the show here on Page One and help me share this news. Susan McDermott, you're here on The Nonprofit Coach. You with us here?
Yes, I am, Ted. Thank you for having me.
Susan, hey, it's great to have you today. We're going to announce with you a big, new, bold initiative that's going to take us straight through 2011. I'm going to let you tell us about it, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about it, too. You can tell I'm very, very excited. What do we got going on with the AFP Wiley Fund Development Book Series?
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the intro. Basically, just let me give a quick bit of information about me. I'm the senior editor here at John Wiley & Sons, in charge of the nonprofit book publishing program. And for the past 15 years or so, we've had a book series with AFP entitled the AFP Fund Development Series. And basically, it was developed to provide fund development professionals, volunteers, board members, and others interested in the nonprofit sector with top quality publications that help advance philanthropy as voluntary action for the public good. The books that we do are practical. They provide timely guidance and information on fundraising, charitable giving, and related subjects. We typically publish between 3 and 5 new books a year, and this is just a really great series, and really the partnership between Wiley and AFP enables us to really make sure that we have the right kind of books for the that the audience needs. We have AFP has a publications committee that vets every proposal and book as it comes into the to AFP to be approved for publication to the series. So it's just something that everybody is really positive about, and thanks to Ted, who is also a series author, with his book. we have a we're going to start in, I guess we're starting next week. We're starting a monthly radio interview series, talking with a new AFP series author every month. And we're starting next week with Kay Sprinkle Grace, whose book is entitled Beyond Fundraising.
She's going to be fundraising will be the book that will be highlighted. I got to tell you, Susan, I am so excited about this. You have done just an outstanding job in building this library of professionals in the AFP Wiley author series. And so just for our listeners, just for you to know, the third Tuesday of every month is now going to be AFP Wiley Radio. And we are going to be featuring, as Susan just said, one of the authors that have been chosen to be part of AFP, which stands for the Association of Fundraising Professionals, and the Wiley series. And as Susan just said, I can't think of a better way to launch this series than with Kay Sprinkle Grace. Can you?
Oh, no, absolutely. She's just, internationally renowned. She's got these wonderful principles and strategies for developing relationships with donors, and she's just got such a wealth of information. She's just a spectacular person.
And her book, Beyond Fundraising, of course, is really now a standard in the industry. And so Kay Sprinkle Grace will launch this series next week. So join us next week here on The Nonprofit Coach. And then, as Susan said, every single month we're going to have another author, and we're going to be specifically focused on one of the books of the AFP Wiley series. And Susan, when I look at this list, which we'll share with our audience as the year unfolds, but I see people like Jocelyn Daw and Jim Greenfield. I mean, there's a sage in our industry. I mean, you've got to know Jim Greenfield's thinking on fundraising if you're going to succeed. We've got Carla Williams and Simone Joyeau and Tom Ahern, Randy Moss and David Neff. I mean, we've just got such a wide array of professionals. This is amazing.
Yeah, and what I think is really great about this is it's a nice balance between, as you say, the respected names in the field, the Kay Graces and the Jim Greenfields, and then the sort of the new thinkers, Randy Moss and David Neff. Their book is hasn't even been published yet, and so they'll be speaking, you know, closer to publication time. And it's just really, you know, talking about innovative, you know, innovations in nonprofits, and it's just it's spectacular. So it's a real nice balance of you know, the sort of old guard, and then the people who are leading the charge now.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I am thrilled to join you and Wiley today in announcing the AFP Wiley Radio Show, which again will be hosted here on the Nonprofit Coach each and every month, starting next week with Kay Sprinkle Grace. So everybody stay tuned for this wonderful show. And I know, Susan, you'll be coming back and helping us highlight the books. And we're also going to have this noted in the AFP newsletter so that they'll be promoting those books as well.
Yeah, eWire. It goes out every Tuesday to approximately 30,000 members. And they're starting the announcement today. They'll be talking about it and getting their membership engaged and excited about this this radio series.
Well,
and thank
great.
You.
Well,
thank you, Ted.
It's always wonderful to get professionals together to have the opportunity to learn from each other. And I want to please wish you a very happy holiday, and thank you for launching right here in the holiday season the AFP Wiley Radio Series. Susan, you have a wonderful holiday, and we'll catch you back here on the show when we promote the January show.
Perfect. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Ted, and you have a great holiday as well.
You bet. Take care. All right, back here on page one. Again, I want to make sure that we're bringing you the latest news, and this is really terrific. You'll find over in the radio links at tedhartradio.com, YouTube's top 2010 most buzzed about social network list. Now, the list is great, but I have to start off by saying it's amazing what sites we've been used to seeing on such a list who are dropped from the list. You know, one day you're the hottest thing, and then the next day you're just not. And the folks who are just not in 2010 are Craigslist, Friendster, and MySpace, not even in the top 10. And those used to be names that you could really, really count on for being in the top 10. And some of the folks that are new to the list, Google Buzz. You remember, we've talked about Google Buzz on this show. They've had a couple fits and starts in trying to really get that social network working, and they are starting to get some traction. So here they are showing up in the top 10. Not too surprising, I think, when you look at the top 10. Now, this is YouTube's list that they put together. YouTube is number one. Flickr is number two. Three is Twitter. Four is Match.com. LinkedIn is number five. Facebook is number six. A site called Groupon is number seven. And you can see the rest of the list right over there in the radio links at TedHartRadio.com. Now, you'll also find in the radio links today, we were just talking to Susan McDermott, senior editor over at John Wiley & Sons, about the AFP Wiley Fund Development Series. We've actually given you a link over in the radio links today so that you can see all of the books that are in that series. Now, we're not in the first year here of AFP Wiley Radio going to be able to highlight all of those authors, but we do have just an amazing array. All the authors have been chosen for the entire year. We've been working with the folks at Wiley for a few months on putting all of this together. So thank you, Susan. Thank you, the folks over at Wiley and AFP. We're going to get started with AFP Wiley Radio next week with Kay Sprinkle Grace. All right, next up here on the Nonprofit Coach, we are going headstrong into page two. Now, what a timely topic to bring on to page two. It's my pleasure to welcome here to the Nonprofit Coach, Steve Hafner. Steve Hafner is not only the founder of HEP Development Services, but is really a leader in providing data services to the nonprofit industry. Back in 1996, before a lot of folks were even thinking about databases, Steve was out there crunching the numbers and crunching the data. His philosophy of providing accurate data with phenomenal customer service is really a backbone not only of HEP Development, but something that a lot of folks in our industry look to. He is certainly an expert in data management and data mining and in the world of matching gifts for your organization. Welcome here to the Nonprofit Coach, Steve Hafner.
Hey, Ted. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's great to have you here. You know, matching gifts is always such an important way for organizations to raise money, but it seems that it tends to kind of get lost in the shuffle. The money is sitting there, and a lot of organizations, particularly smaller organizations, just don't know how to manage that. So why don't we start all the way back before I get into some of my questions here and have you introduce HEP Development, and most importantly, what are matching gifts?
Ted, absolutely. Matching gifts are the opportunity for donors who work for employers that will match your contribution to various .orgs or .edus. So, for example, if I give to my alma mater, George Mason in Fairfax, a $500 pledge, my employer will match that gift. So instead of being a $500 gift, it now becomes a $1,000 gift. And you are absolutely correct. It's often an afterthought, and we've spent the better part of the last, I'd say, 12, 14 years, just kind of educating the space on these missed opportunities.
You know, I remember starting to work with you, Steve, all the way back many years ago when I was the Chief Development Officer at Johns Hopkins Medical Center's Bayview campus.
Yep.
And we really were just starting to introduce that concept on that campus as well, and it started generating thousands of dollars right away. As you said, $500 becomes $1,000. Why do you think it's been so difficult to get such a simple message across to the nonprofit sector?
Well, within the .org space, as differentiated from the .edu space, many times the donors, number one, can be anonymous. You know, you can give online and so on. But they oftentimes don't know where they work. So if you don't know where someone works, it's hard for you to inform them if they're matching gift eligible. Beyond that, corporations don't always do the best job that they can to promote these, the whole concept of matching gifts. And just to kind of highlight that, you know, if you ever have done a walk for a certain cause, you have friends and family members who don't even know what matching gifts are. And so there's a lot of education still to be done, particularly with the smaller nonprofits.
And so walk me through sort of one of the larger programs or you know, pick a company specifically, because it does change from company to company, doesn't it, in terms of the process, but typically it's the employee and interacting with their personnel department. Is that right?
It is, Ted, and it has to be employee donor initiated. You know, the recipient nonprofit cannot initiate the actual match itself. The paperwork has to be completed by the donor submitted. The good news is that much of that is happening online these days. And just a stat for you, you know, out of I'd say 1,600, close to 1,700 parent companies, about 200 plus. Are now in an online type format.
And of course, that you would think that makes it a lot easier for organizations, but they still don't seem to have this as just a regular part of doing business. What I've seen in organizations is you'll get a development officer who gets it and understands it, and so it becomes something that's part of their fundraising program for a while, and then it drifts away. Is it just seen as too much work? I mean, I can't imagine looking the other way for essentially free money.
Well, yeah, I mean, the folks who we're working with get it, and we work with about 6,000 nonprofits nationwide and throughout Canada. And just to give you an example, American Cancer Society, one of the best nonprofits in the world, they were doing about $2 million 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, in matching gift revenue. Ted, we simply put a simple strategy in place for them, a structure and a strategy, with someone at ACS being responsible for matching gifts. And what we did is we put a link up on their website, on their primary donation page, and now we have it in multiple locations promoting it, and we can get into some of that momentarily if we have time. But they've now gone to just over $13 million in matching gifts in about 4 years.
In matching gifts money, $2 million to $13 million just in matching gift money by having the right strategy in place.
Ted, it's recurring revenue. It's recurring revenue. We also know something about donors who are match eligible versus donors who are not. We know donors who are match eligible typically give a larger principal gift because they've got that minimum incentive. Many companies have, you know, minimum threshold that they'll match of, say, $50 or $100. So you've got that match incentive going. You've also got a better retention rate because that incentive is there as well.
Well, now tell us what match eligible means.
All right, so let's take a typical database of 100,000 records. You have an annual data donor roster of 100,000 records. Typically for a charity, roughly 1 in 10 will be match eligible. So that's 10,000. That means out of those 100,000 records, there are 10,000 donors in my database who are match eligible. So my job as a fundraiser is to find out who they are. Once you've done that, at the point of solicitation, whether it's in a face-to-face, whether it's an email, you know, solicitation, a snail mail, whatever it may be, an event, you now know that those 10,000 folks are eligible, and you're much more likely to get that gift match. And previously, I'd said the match can't be initiated by the donor, well, or by the recipient organization. But what you can do is tip the donor off that, hey, here are the how-to instructions. Here's your matching gift form at IBM or Microsoft or whatever it may be. You take care of this, and that gift is going to be doubled to us.
Yeah, and it is as simple as that. What are some of the costs that are associated with the kind of strategy that you put forward? Because certainly an organization could attempt to do all this on their own, but there is so much data that you need to crunch to get to that 1 out of 10 that it does make sense to have a professional partner help guide you in that process. So help our listeners understand what would be an average strategy process that they might work with your firm on.
Well, it's a great question, Ted. Where I would start for most nonprofits is the first thing is on the Internet. On your web page, you want to make sure you have some type of link allowing you to search matching gift companies. We call it the eMatch donor link. When you're putting it on volunteer pages, we call it a match badge or a match button, if you will. That's just a baseline strategy. Everybody gets it. That can run anywhere from, you know, $500 a year to $2,500 a year, depending on the size. So we're not talking a lot of money. And we have clients who are literally 1-2-person development shops up to the largest nonprofits in the world.
Now, help an organization understand. So starting with their website is key to making that happen. What's the click-through on that? Does it still take the invitation to let people know that that's there, or is this so interesting to donors that it could become one of the most important parts of their website?
Well, it's definitely the latter. When you have a link on your website, what you're doing is I've made my pledge, okay? So I've just given a gift online, let's say, of $150. What's going to happen is a button's going to pop up and say, hey, check to see if your gift can be matched. It can be doubled or tripled, you know, whatever you want it to say, Ted. You're obviously going to take, at that point, you're going to take advantage of that opportunity because, if nothing else, you're curious to see if your company's matching gift eligible. And in many cases, the donor just doesn't know because, you know, it has not been well promoted. So if I do my search, I find my firm, I've quickly done a couple things. The nonprofit has helped me identify if my gift can be doubled or tripled. They've given me how-to instructions, and in many cases, they've given me the matching gift form needed to get my gift match. And that's one of HEP's claims to fame is providing digital copies of those matching gift forms where heretofore donors had to call HR. good luck getting through to HR if I work for a subsidiary. It's Friday night. I made my donation. Am I going to take the time on Monday to get my form?
It makes too much work out of it. And so is that why a lot of charities have traditionally in the past maybe shied away from really getting actively involved in what you're doing now? Is so streamlining the process that it really should be one of those core programs that charities are putting together now?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And then beyond just having a link up on your website and your volunteer pages, you know, there are a lot of really, I call them top-shelf strategies. Number one, what's in my database now? You know, I might have 10, 15,000 donors. Ted, by the way, everything I'm talking about, it doesn't matter if you've got a database of 1,000 or 20 million. We work with everybody in between.
Is 1,000 sort of the minimum? This show covers the gamut of charity sizes. We do have a lot of charities that are small, and we always want to make sure that we're providing strategies for them and large ones as well. Is there sort of a minimum where the database and the fees associated starts making sense?
I would say you want to have somewhere around 1,000 names in your database. So that's not a lot. That covers a large swath of, in fact, probably the vast majority of nonprofits out there. But we have, you know, PS 71 schools in Brooklyn, New York as clients, Ted. So it's all relative.
Now, say I have 1,000, 10,000. Can I go to your firm and ask you to scan those names and give me a sense of if I'm hitting that 1 to 10? Or is that really difficult to do because oftentimes donor files don't have employer information?
Well, that's where it gets interesting. Most nonprofits historically just don't have a lot of employer information. So about 2 years ago, we developed a proprietary product called Employer Find, and it does what the name implies. It appends en masse employer data, job titles, business addresses to your donor lists. So think about that for a second. You know, beyond matching gifts, you can look at planned giving opportunities, matching gift opportunities, but let's stay here just with matching gifts. You know, now I've got a database. You know, let's take the 10,000 donors on my database. I screen them through Employer Find, and HEPA appends 2,500 employer names. Well, now, what we'll do is we'll mine that data. We call it micro mining, and we'll flag who's match eligible. So out of those 2,500 names, HEPA's going to find 10%. That's 250 donors who are now eligible. So in that scenario,
and it's a proprietary database. So where does that come from? You use national databases where people have reported, you know, I got this position, or a press release is put out. All that comes into your database. And now when I come with my donor files, you can say, well, we know where a lot of the top donors work. And so if we match them up on your file, now you've got information you didn't have before.
That's exactly right. And as far as the data, it's all public domain data. What we've done, Ted, is we've compiled over 100 sources. So you can imagine the task, you know, the work hours involved in that. And beyond that, we use technology to harvest as well. And so we've built a really good product our first time out. It's getting better and better, though. I hope to get to the point where, we're at a 50%, 55% employer append rate. And that'll just...
Of course you want it to get better, but what you've done already is you've taken what used to be, and I remember, you know, again, years ago when we were working together, what used to be a good idea but a fairly passive process and very labor-intensive if you really wanted to work it, to now utilizing technology, utilizing the databases, as you said, over 100 databases, to actually now create a strategy that allows a development officer to actually develop this as a program, as opposed to just sort of a passive, maybe we'll be lucky enough to get somebody who's with the right employer to ask the right questions, to get the right form at the right time, and then we'll get that matching gift. Now it's becoming much more of a strategy.
Ted, absolutely. You're now being, you're initiating your data. You're improving the quality of your data. You're actually taking control of it, creating a strategy so that your donor engagement is just enhanced.
Well, because where that can also dovetail in, and you and I both know that, you know, one of the hidden secrets and benefits of having a well-oiled matching gift program is actually being able to make the case for grant support to corporate foundations and corporations based on the number of employees that work at that corporation that support your charity. And by never having that information and never working your database, you completely miss that strategy that a lot of organizations could benefit from.
You would have never known. And if you don't have employer data beyond that, you know, your donors are essentially anonymous. You know, if you don't know where somebody works or their job title, you really don't know that much about them. And so this
right.
is not overstated when I say it's groundbreaking.
Yeah, well, it really is. So let's again for our listeners here. Let's again think through this strategy. So really, the first step it would seem to me would be to get your database analyzed for employer match, because that then allows you to be more proactive. In addition to, I guess, simultaneously putting the link on your website so that your donors could start self-identifying themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, the two.
Is that sort of strategy one, strategy two, and then you can actually start thinking about campaigning?
Absolutely. We have the data. Now what do we do? What's most effective? Do we want to email them? And by the way, Ted, when we flag an employer as match eligible for a nonprofit, we're not just telling you they're match eligible. We're giving you all the relevant matching policy information, like the minimum gift, the maximum gift, the email at the company if you have a question, the matching gift form. So with that matching gift form, yeah, there's a lot I can do with that. I can push that in an email to my donor prior to the solicitation, during the solicitation, as a post-solicitation acknowledgement. All of a sudden, you know, you're getting really creative with the ability to just educate your donors and kind of own the match, if you will.
Now, again, we're broadcast across the internet, and so we do have a lot of listeners around the world. Is your program primarily U.S.-based, or can others around the world access matching gifts programs through you?
If we have nonprofits in Canada, many, a lot of .edu's in Canada, Ted. We also have schools throughout Europe that have a presence. Like, for example, the American College, I think, in Switzerland, right on the Italian border. Beautiful area, by the way. And a number of AU Cairo, AU Beirut. It's a really good question. We're looking at Europe first, Australia and Asia second, and compiling a matching gift database. It's to a lesser extent, but it's still, in our opinion, worthwhile, even if the percentages are lower in terms of numbers of people who match, because it's free money.
Right. It really is. Now, we've got an interesting question that just came in, Steve, from John in Dallas. And I guess, you know, I would have to agree with him. He said that it's his opinion or his view, I guess, that these matching gift programs have been going away. The companies have been cutting them, and he's wondering, have any companies been adding, or is the list just getting smaller?
Well, you know, when the economy, we really started to notice in our business summer of 2008, you know, the economy really, really tightening. And what we had at that point was somewhere in the vicinity of just under 15,000 corporations and subsidiaries matching gifts. And that's not counting Canada as well, because that would have been a little higher. And then what you had, and John's correct, at that point in time, we were starting to see things recede. Subsequently, however, you had the Haiti disaster and many other disasters throughout the world, and you saw a lot of companies step up and begin to put match programs together, if nothing else, just for that disaster. And so what happened, many of them ended up keeping them. And the truth of the matter is, we've grown our database by about 1,600, almost 2,000 companies over the last couple of years. So we're kissing 20,000 right now.
wow, 20,000 companies. Now, what kind of charities make a really good candidate for this kind of strategy? Is it across the board? Is it every charity qualifies, or are there some folks who really this strategy would not work for?
It varies. You can break it down. We have it broken down in about 20 categories, but you know, social services are a good one. Charitable organizations, like Habitat for Humanity, for example, healthcare, hospices, museums, you name it, anything cultural, environmental. Many of the companies will match. Just to give you a statistic, most of the corporations will match higher ed. You start breaking it down from there, you get to about 8 out of 10 companies will match, the charitable space. But most of the ones I mentioned are pretty high on that list.
When we come back from a small break here, Steve, I'm going to ask you to give us both an example of some details of how Purdue has used this service to dramatically increase their fundraising, but also small organizations like a small PBS station. So when we come back from a little bit of a break here, I'm hoping that you can share those with us. We are here on the Nonprofit Coach. You can call in and ask a question of Steve Hafner at 347-324-3080. We're over in the chat room. You can ask questions there or email us at tedhart@tedhart.com. Now, we've got a little bit of a little station break here, if you will. Many of you will remember that I was up in Toronto at the AFP Toronto Congress. When I was up there, I was hosted by the fine folks, Stephen Thomas and Associates, and they work with us to put on the really terrific Digital Leap Conference each year. This little clip here will give you some insight drawing from the session that I did in Toronto and looking forward to Digital Leap 2011.
Hi, I'm Kristen. I'm here with Ted Hart, who just did a session on social networking and online fundraising. It was a really great session. For those who couldn't be there, can you give us the top highlights of what went on?
Well, it was a two-hour session, so it's a little hard to do that quickly. But I think the most important thing for people to take away is my prediction that within 4 years' time, every charity will need a solid social networking strategy, and that they should do that by year over the next 4 years, building the asset that they need to be able to have the social capital that they'll be able to use in 4 years' time.
Okay, great. And there was a number of really great tips in that session, but if you had one that you could give to people, what would that be?
Well, I think get active on social media now, but don't overplay it.
Mm-hmm.
It really is the interaction of online and offline that really is the key to success. And I shared in my session the Aunt Mabel effect, which people have to come to my session maybe at Digital Leap on April 12th here in Toronto. You can come and listen and learn all about the Aunt Mabel effect.
Great. Thank you very much.
And we are back here on the Nonprofit Coach. So you just heard the Digital Leap 2011 up in Toronto will take place on April 12th. You can find that information in the radio links at tedhartradio.com or go directly to digitalleap.org. Now, Steve, coming out of that that break, it makes me wonder, because as you heard in that, and one of the things I've been sharing in my lectures recently is my prediction of the importance of building these assets of utilizing social media, that we do have time, but we can't delay because it does take time to build those assets. And I'm wondering, in this interconnected world, if there's a social media opportunity here for charities to get employees, to encourage employees through social networking to not forget, hey, our employer does match, and if you give, it's going to double or as you said, triple in some cases you're giving. Is that part of the strategy? Is that coming? Where does that fit within what your folks are working on right now?
Yeah, I think that's a definite it's coming, and I think it's a great opportunity. There are now services in the space that you can go out and actually look at the influence people have on the internet, in other words, kind of their digital imprint. And I could see potentially products coming down the road where, you could look at that and look at spheres of influence, Ted, to promote matching gifts.
Yeah, I certainly think that would be the case because particularly you know, as you see all over the internet today, and we just had the recent launch of Jumo.com, which we spoke about on the show last week, that's fully integrated into Facebook. And as we see those sorts of networks come together, if they take off, which of course, you know, it's still waiting to see if all those things do take off, the more that people post their philanthropic accomplishments, and the more likely it seems to me that they would also be proud of the fact that they got their employer to pitch in the same amount towards charities that they care about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I spoke earlier about the Match Badge, and that literally is just a nonprofit branded graphic, if you will, just a mini banner, Ted, that embeds the Match search box. So it might say ACS for American Cancer Society times two, or Match My Gift, or whatever you want to call it. But it's something that you can put up on your volunteer page, but wouldn't it be great if you could also post it throughout social media? You know, as kind of I'm a proud donor of this organization, and I want to help you see if your gift can be matched as well. People could share them.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think that that does provide just another layer, but as listeners of this show know, I'm always a big proponent of getting the basics down right first before we jump into that shiny new nickel of that is social media right now. And the basics are still to understand and to work your own database, to put together strategies on your own website. So those are the basics. So as I promised before the break, I wanted to come back and ask you specifically to share with us some of the steps that were taken by Purdue and what that's done for that organization.
Well, Purdue has been a client of ours since the mid-90s, and they have a particular development software that has an interface, and that's something we haven't gone into. We have, you know, partnerships with about 30 software vendors out there that allow you to integrate our data into their offline development software or their online giving page. And with Purdue, what we've done, since we've done this many times, we've screened their organizational data, not to get too technical, but we screen the org data, and we can instantly flag whatever's on their system that's match eligible, give it back to them in a ready upload format, so they can upload that data into their, we'll call it the matching policy window, things like the minimum gift, the maximum gift, the gift ratio. So then they can internally begin to start tracking these folks. So that was step one. Beyond that, they were able to flag donors, lapsed donors, and non-donors who were match eligible. So what they did with that data, they then targeted the folks at the point of solicitation. So with their phone-a-thon, they have our data integrated. And again, that's another software integration where, you know, before I pick up the call, I can tell the donor, our records indicate you work for ExxonMobil and your gift will be matched 1-to-1, 2-to-1, whatever. I'm much more likely to get that gift matched. So that's just a simple strategy. In addition,
doesn't it change the dialogue now? I mean, doesn't it change the likelihood of getting larger gifts from someone when you're able to help them leverage their own opportunities?
It does. And if you've ever been to a Lehigh, you know, Princeton, you name it, a school where you've got a donor percentage well north of 40%, you know what the VP wants to see, Ted? He wants to see the needle moving forward. He wants to see new donor acquisition. What a great way, if I can identify 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 non-donors in my database, who I can now say, Ted, if you just give that first-time pledge to the Lehigh Fund of $50, it's going to be matched 2-to-1. Make them aware of what that missed opportunity is going to mean to Lehigh or your organization. That's huge.
It is huge. Now, where does this normally make the first big impact for a charitable organization? Is it at the lower end of giving, or is this really a major gift strategy?
It's both. It's both. It starts at the lower end. You know, you're looking at your annual fund type givers. So that's the vast majority of your givers, right? I mean, that's going to be your largest pool are people giving gifts under, let's just say, $10,000. And granted, a lot of the folks we're speaking to today, $10,000 is a major gift. But you look at a Purdue, That's what we call leadership annual giving type gift. But I do, Ted, if I can, I'd like to just touch on the major gift aspect, because what a phenomenal opportunity. Major gifts, just like we were talking earlier, you know, 10 years ago, even today, matching gifts have been an afterthought, but especially at the major gift level. They're so happy to have that gift in that nobody even thinks that, you know, let's just say a $100,000 pledge could potentially be matched. Well, many, many companies will match $10,000, $25,000, $50,000, $100,000, you name it. There's some that will match up to $250,000. What if I could now arm that development officer before he or she goes out and meets with a six-digit or seven-digit prospect, and we could now give them a tool to mine and find out if that donor is match eligible? That would allow them to get that gift double, potentially, or a portion thereof. And what we've released, just briefly, is a product called Match My Gift. It is the first smartphone-ready matching gift app in the space, trademarked by HEP. We're really, really excited about it. We just announced it last week. We have five major institutions that have already signed up for it. And, Ted, if I have anything to say about it, I expect we'll have thousands by this time next year. And my goal is to have that app not just for major gift officers, but anybody who's a volunteer, deans at schools, volunteers at nonprofits, for example. What if an organization, let's say World Vision, you know, they have all those volunteers out there, Habitat for Humanity. Wouldn't you want those folks who have their own personal giving page, who are raising money for you, have that little app so they can check out if, you know, Aunt Marie is match eligible, or my friend down the block who just gave a $100 pledge for my walk. You know, now all of a sudden you're talking, again, I'd love to use the term point of solicitation, you've heard it over and over. Now you're talking about getting grassroots level, having literally putting the power of matching gifts on your smartphone.
So this is where you're having a conversation with someone, you're talking about your favorite charity, and it sounds like they're interested, and immediately you, right on your smartphone, have the ability to share more information about, wow, you know, did you know your employer matches? So rather than sort of in the abstract, they themselves can be more specific.
That's exactly right. And then while I'm meeting with the person, I can email them the form right from my phone. So they've got it on their phone, or they've got it on their inbox.
That's a terrific opportunity for folks. Now, paint for us, you know, with this add-on and other things, what's sort of the average budget that an organization should be looking at, and what are the variables? Is it based on number of files, number of hits, where are the variables for cost?
You know, everything we do is essentially a subscription. But if you're talking about a small organization, you know, smaller nonprofit, let's break it down into three categories: small, medium, and large. So let's take a small organization. To do some of what we've talked about, in a robust way, including doing the employer find and identifying employer names, you need a budget of about $2,000. That'll buy you a lot. You know, you start getting a little,
okay,
little higher.
And how many records does that cover me for? So I've got 2,000 in my budget. What am I going to get for that? And where do I stop? Where do
All
I
right.
have to go further now?
All right, so that'll get you up to 10,000 searches with employer find. So that's going to run about $1,000 or 10 cents a search. So that gives you another 1,000 to use.
Now, can I search year-round, or do I search one time, or how does that work?
Yeah, we're doing it one time. We're now at a point where we're in our renewal stage. So what we're doing is we're working out year two, year three type renewals. In fact, we're selling three-year licenses to this. And so in year two, what you do is you'd screen everybody. In fact, we just rescreen your whole database just to see if any existing things have changed. But certainly we want to look at the folks who we didn't find in the first pass. We want to look at those folks again, because our data is changing daily, you can imagine, with 100-plus sources. So right now, it's basically a once-every-year type of deal. But, Ted, I know you know where I'm going with this. What we're looking to do is basically hold the data in queue and have a daily screening so that we're constantly looking for new employer names. We have that technology with our Wealth Tracker product, which is a high-end web crawling tool that identifies major gift prospects and tracks activity. But the same technology, we call it RM365 or Rapid Match 365. Think about it for a second. We screen your data through Employer Find, 10,000 records for $1,000. We find 2,500 names of employers, give you all that great data back, let you put a strategy together, help you put a strategy together. That leaves 7,500 records that are untouched. Well, what do we do with that? What if we could every single day scour all the sources, public sources available, to look for fresh employer data? Now you've got a daily or weekly email drip of new employer names coming into you as they're updated by us.
Yeah, and that potentially really just dramatically changes the scope of charity's ability to use this kind of data. What if I don't have that kind of money? Do I start with, is there a lower cost to start with having the link on my website, or is it really, you know, you got to have that $2,000 budget to really be able to make use of these tools?
No, we have low cost. I mean, you can get involved in this for $450. You can get what's called a semi-custom link. A custom link for a small nonprofit, we will license it to you for $500 a year. And what that does is two things primarily. It's going to allow you to put the matching gift search box up on your website so your donors and friends can have access to it. So when they're giving a gift, they're getting engaged for matching gifts. In addition, your staff can use it. And so that's also a good tool. And I've got a great example. You brought up before the break the station, the PBS station in Upper Michigan. I got an unsolicited email 2 weeks ago from a really nice development officer there. And she goes, Steve, we just got your invoice for renewal. And they're on the very low end. They're spending, low end meaning they're spending $500 a year with us, Ted. They got a call. And they were at that base package where they're using the eMatch for their donors. They were also using the eMatch internally for their staff. They got a call from a donor who said, I want to check. I just made a $10,000 pledge. I'd like you to check to see if my employer matches. They quickly looked it up. In fact, he did match. They emailed him the form. He got it. He got it matched, sent an email back to him saying, thanks so much for that service. She sent me an email, couldn't believe it, said, needless to say, we're going to be renewing. So it's a $10,000 gift for, you know, $500, and that's just one gift, but you know.
Yeah, and that's just one example. Now, how often does all of this this change? I mean, it seems to me that as you said, there's over 6,000 employers that right now in the United States alone will match gifts.
Yeah, it's actually in the U.S. It's kissing 17,000. You throw in Canada, you've
17,000. Okay,
yeah,
so even higher than that.
Yeah, you're getting close to 20,000. It's daily. You know, you can imagine a database that size. We have a number of tools in place to track it. But you're looking, on average, we make about 30 to 40 changes a day. And if you got our data
30
online,
or 40 changes a day. So the average development office, you know, if they're going to engage in this process, what do you find for your average customer? Is the match dollars that they actually receive? I mean, you know, we look at American Cancer Society, and that, you know, that's just a huge program. They've got lots and lots of staff,
right.
But for the average organization, what can they expect to actually bring in from match dollars, do you think?
Well, what they want to look at, I call it the 10% rule. Roughly 10% of your money coming in through gifts, through individual gifts, could be matched. That's the number. So if I'm bringing in $100,000 annually, my goal is pretty modest, but it's $10,000. If I'm bringing in $2.3 million, it's $230,000. And it can be higher than that, but that's the kind of the rule of thumb. And the first thing
we do... And this is the sort of thing as we were talking about on page one with the announcement of the 2011 email marketing survey. This is the sort of thing that also builds over time, right? We build this asset, we build the expectation, we build the relationships, and over time, you raise more money. While it seems that you can dramatically alter your utilization of the matching gift program, you know, in a first year, my guess is that the payoff on something like this is actually more of a 3 to 4 year window.
Yeah, there's no doubt, and the more you educate, the more you're going to get people excited about matching gifts and people taking advantage of the opportunity. Our business development director did a short analysis where we were looking at like a 5 year return on somebody who gives a gift and gets it matched, and for, you know, a larger nonprofit, that can end up being, you know, $1 million over, 5 years. I don't have the exact numbers and what the metrics were, but you're absolutely right. I mean, you're not going to see, 100% growth right away, but you will see growth. And over time, you'll start to see the retention rate on those donors be higher than just your regular, non-match eligible donors.
This strategy has changed so much over the last few years and has become actually a development process now, as opposed to just sort of filing some forms and hopefully you've got some time. It almost seems like for a lot of development offices that haven't started to really integrate this into their core program and starting to look at it for their web design, it almost seems like they better hope that their bosses don't find out about this. Because leaving this kind of money on the table really would not look good for a lot of development officers.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And, that's a interesting comment because, there's always a lot of turnover in the development space, right? It's something like development officers, and it's something like 22, 23% annually, which is pretty high. And it's really funny because I'll have worked with someone at a particular nonprofit or a particular institution, and 2 years down the road, they'll call me and say, "Hey, Steve, we don't have your data. What's going on?" And they'll say, "We want the webinar. We want a conference call right now. I want my advancement services person in here. I want my annual giving person." And I just get a kick out of it because, if you take care of somebody, you deliver good data, you deliver a solution, they're always going to come back to you. And you're absolutely right. It's a best practices.
Well, Steve, I can't thank you enough for the opportunity to have you on the show here. This kind of strategy really is a core strategy that all development officers really need to grow to understand. I think, unfortunately, for a lot of charitable organizations, it's been seen as secondary or ancillary and not something that for a lot of offices you even hear a lot of discussion about. It's always interesting to me with programs like this. I mean, you don't go to the average fundraising conference and hear them talking about a matching gift strategy, whereas for the average charity, if you talked about how to increase your fundraising by 10% in the next year, you'd fill the room.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Yeah. So well done. I really appreciate you coming on the show. I look forward to having you on again and talking to you about this this kind of strategy. You folks are doing a great job over there at HEP Development. I'm going to give you just about a minute here just to wrap up any final thoughts that you have for our audience, and then we've got to race over to page three.
Hey, Ted, thanks for having me on, and it's great to see your success as well. HEP really is, we're an innovator. We're a boutique shop that really helps the nonprofit space improve donor engagement by improving the quality of their data, and that involves prospect research, matching gifts, data mining, phone, email, address updates, employer updates, you name it. You can reach us at hepdata.com. Feel free to email us. Webcast is going to be rebroadcast. You can find it on Ted's archive. So it's been my pleasure to be with everyone today. Thank you.
Great, Steve. Thanks for joining us here. Okay, page three, just wrapping up here, what comes next? We will be here next week, Tuesday, with Kay Sprinkle Grace in the first edition of the AF Wiley radio show. There will be no show on December 28th. Mark your calendar. There will be no show on January 4th. Nonprofit Coach will be taking a couple of weeks off for the year and holidays, but we will be coming back in January on January 11th with a big show, and then we've got Jim Greenfield as on the AFP Wiley radio show on January 18th. Everybody have a great week, and we'll be right back here next I'm a Nonprofit Coach. Take care. Bye.